This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade, they talk about the things they did that day.
Rewind a 3-hour SmackDown. So when our downloads go through the roof, because I know most of you are not clinging to the 3-hour era of SmackDown.
This is when, like, you pop the tape into like the tape rewinder and you just wait forever and ever before you return the video back to the store.
Yeah, that's a technique that a portion of our audience has probably never experienced, the long wait of a tape rewind. How about getting static and having to adjust the tracker on your set?
We don't really have to deal with that anymore. No,
not as much. We are here following SmackDown from Buffalo, New York, to kick off 2026.
Man, I know they calendar. Do this all the time at like whenever, well, they go to any town, they insult the team, but they did not.
Did they do any of that tonight?
I would just say, like, man, they made Buffalo sound even worse than it already does in my mind.
They'll never live those three Super Bowl losses. It was like, how many of these people that are laughing at this, how many of your teams have gone to the Super Bowl? Much less 3 years in a row. I'd rather go to the Super Bowl and lose.
Would you really?
Than not go at all.
Yeah, okay, sure.
That's why I always enjoyed the Atlanta Braves in the 90s. I was like, they got one World Series in that whole stretch. But man, they were going deep almost every year.
I guess so.
Well, folks, it's a busy weekend. It is Wrestle Kingdom 20 weekend, and Way and I are going to be back. We will have a show up for our Post Wrestling Cafe members on Sunday. You will get Way and I on the free feed. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson will be running down the show. And this month, folks, it is your opportunity to beat the price increase. Okay. February 1st, we will be putting our price increase into effect for those at the regular level. Now, it is worth noting that if you sign up before February 1st, you will get your existing price locked in for a year. Conversely, if you are an existing subscriber, this will not affect you until next year as well. So this is going to be for people that sign up after February the 1st. We did go over this on the Christmas show. This was a lot of a debate and discussion that led to this decision that Way and I have made, but we are trying to make it as fair as possible for everyone out there and giving you a month heads up to be able to outsmart the economics of post wrestling. So those that do join the Post Wrestling Cafe, Way, look at this menu for this month. It is going to be
The ages. I had to use more, okay? Like, usually I like to have a little, like, you know, a square thumbnail for everything. But this week I had to just, like, I had to throw a bunch of stuff on the bottom and I had to add the word more in there. That's how loaded and overflowing this month's menu is.
So in addition to Wrestle Kingdom, we're going to be doing a watch along with Brandon from New Jersey. We're going to watch the Royal Rumble matches from 1990 and from 1995.
Yeah. Why those?
I have no idea. I didn't choose them.
I give you a list, I suppose. And like, listen, I guess like we have already done a few Rumble watch alongs with Brandon. So those are kind of off the table. We've done a number of recent like full reviews of these shows. And I guess like 90 and 95 were two of the free ones. By the way, all of these matches are actually available on YouTube and we'll be sending out links for everybody, for people who would like to watch along.
That's probably as good an answer as possible. They're on YouTube. Yeah. They're very accessible. You're not going to find them on Peacock today. Also this month on a special Rewind Away, it will be a Tanahashi Okada retrospective. There was no Nobuhiko Takada that will be found on that show, as we will go back and we will look at some of their best matches, not all of the catalog, but the best ones. So that is coming up on Rewind Away this coming month. We're going to do a special review of Impact's debut on AMC. We are a convincing way to sit down and watch Impact. Plus, we'll have reviews of TNA Genesis, UFC 324, and the big one. Circle your calendar, Cafe members, Monday, January the 12th, the best and worst of 2025, as Braden Harrington, Davey Portman, Wei Ting, and myself will make our selections in all of the best and worst categories as we say farewell to 2025.
Yeah, yeah. We'll be sending a list of all the categories very shortly to everybody in case you guys wanted to join in as well. We'll be doing that live for all patrons. Should we announce? Yeah, yeah, yeah. We can announce the date right now. January the 12th. I just said it
a minute ago, but
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Well,
sorry to steal the thunder.
Yeah, apologies. Sometimes I don't pay attention to you. But
unless I'm not talking about Madison Rain.
January the 12th is when we'll be doing that show for all patrons, and then at some point later on in the week, everybody will be able to listen to that one as well.
Is this your most is this the closest thing to like writing a final exam that this line of work comes to you? Like, you put a lot of work into your list every year, and this is not a last minute deal for you.
No, it is. It certainly is.
Especially, sorry, let me correct. This is not like a rewind away where you're going to wake up Monday morning and put your list together.
Right. Right. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Well, you'll at least start it on the Sunday.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, I suppose for me that this is a long-term project. Yeah.
So postwrestlingcafe.com, jump on board. It will be quite the month. Looking forward to it.
Also, just a quick mention here. John and Neil and Jack and Neil have been putting a lot of work into our double tiers over the past year, and now it's a pretty full-fledged, I would say, offering, where we got an excellent edition of Book Club from John and Neil this past week, talking about the Natalia Neidhart book. Great listen, John. I needed this podcast last night as I was cleaning up my kitchen because we have an unfortunate mice infestation.
Oh man, we do too. Well, we have a mouse, and I want to capture this thing. It's
how do you know you only have one?
I don't know that. I've only seen one at a time.
Oh, you don't know what you don't see, and one can turn into several very quickly.
Well, we'll talk offline. I need strategies.
Yeah. So,
This was, dude, when you get a waiting text, I mean, it just uplifts your entire day.
Does it really? Excellent podcast from you and Neil talking about that book. But then also post news updates from John, from Neil, from Jack on a pretty much like daily basis, talking about the day's top stories in audio form exclusively for double patrons. That price does not change throughout the rest of the year. Still at $12 for the rest of maybe eternity.
Yeah, in perpetuity, yes. Yeah. Those ones will stay the same, as will the espresso level for the ones out there that mm-hmm. want to dictate what we watch. What maybe someday someone will pick the January 2nd, 2026 edition of SmackDown from Buffalo, and we'll be looking back. The golden age of SmackDown.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. All that can be found at postwrestlingcafe.com. We now shift gears and head to Buffalo, where WrestleTix announcement of tickets distributed 8,852. Now, they were there on March the 3rd of last year for Raw, drawing 13,861. So they were down 36%. I saw a lot of people online speculating about the weather. I don't know how much that holds up.
It could be. It's cold.
Maybe 13,861 went to the show back in March and felt pretty shitty about having to be a Buffalo sports fan. And that was the residual effect of the next time around. They'll be lucky to have 6,000 next time.
Could be all of these things. But, you know, I mean, March really was... You would consider the build towards Royal Rumble. Maybe you can argue the product was a bit hotter back then.
That was right after the turn. It was mm-hmm. the Monday yep. after Elimination Chamber because mm-hmm. they went from Toronto to Buffalo. So that was coming off a really like the biggest angle they shot all year as well. So it is worth noting that difference as well. Michael Cole welcomes us to Buffalo, where the Bills host the lousy Jets on Sunday, he reminds us. And Corey Graves promises us more superstars, more action, and more memories in 2026.
Okay.
More. More action. It's very unquantifiable. Like, could we get a chart of action year by year?
I think he by that he means like more in-ring time, in-ring content, which I feel like with an extra hour, this like that checks out.
The Miz starts off SmackDown. He wants to air his grievances from the last year. All he wanted was a final match and moment with John Cena to close their story, and I should have been the one to tap him out. And Cena smiled off into the sunset. Meanwhile, I'm stuck here in Buffalo. That's one. He offered his mentorship to the young talent, but it was met with entitlement and ungratefulness, and says how he got passed over for Marty Supreme.
Have you seen it?
Yes, I have seen it.
Oh, you have?
Yes.
Wow, you went to the theater and caught
I did. Dude, I went to this theater.
Yeah.
Full. Like, I had to sit next to people. Full.
Wow.
It was completely packed. And at the end of it, the whole theater applauded.
You're kidding me.
They all started applauding. I'm like, what are we doing here? Like, it's a really good movie. Yeah, like, dude, it was a very clear win of which Safdie brother had the better release. Yeah. I mean, with all due respect.
You went to a full theater, so I would say they already won.
I think my theater alone outdrew the global intake for The Smashing Machine. No, this movie, I don't want to give away too much about it. It's excellent. Timothée Chalamet is amazing in it, but there are several incredible performances in this.
Yeah, I'm excited.
You know Kevin O'Leary?
I heard the Cody Rhodes interview, so I heard them like talk about.
Oh, I did not hear the Cody Rhodes interview, yeah. But so many other like media podcasts I listen to have brought up this interview that Timothée Chalamet did, like where he was so into wrestling, and I have not heard really? This, but apparently, yeah. Okay. Anyway,
Kevin O'Leary,
yeah, like this is the dude from Shark Tank, very disliked figure in Canada to say the least, non actor. Mm-hmm. And got cast for this role, and I hate to say it, but he was an incredible, incredible villain in this movie.
This is pretty much everything, like every person who said something about Kevin O'Leary has said basically the same thing.
I don't even follow this guy all that much.
I hate the shit out of this guy. This is the worst piece of shit in the world, but I have to say, great performance.
Yeah, I don't know why people have such a hang up about like awful people can still be really talented. Like that can happen. So,
of course.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm excited.
So,
great.
It's a really good movie, Wei. So when you get a chance.
I'll try not to fall asleep through it.
You can't take Oscar to see this one, though.
No,
definitely not.
No, no.
Not for the kids, but definitely gets my thumbs up.
The Miz.
The Miz, not playing the Timothée Chalamet lead role, says that he refrains from saying Joe Hendry's name, but he brought back a nickname of his as the crowd chants Tiny Balls, which he says will not become a thing again. It's like, oh my God, I am ready to turn this show off at this point. Like, it's just, they're trying to drive me
off.
The
show's 3 hours. It needs content, and Tiny Balls is content.
That'll get us through those third hours. He's the new face of WWE, and unlike Buffalo, I actually win championships. And I am the leader in the room, the adult in the room, and a locker room leader, and he is cut off by the returning Randy Orton in his size medium Buffalo Sabres Orton crossover shirt that he is just bulging through, comes out, and Miz says it's good to have Randy back and clarifies we are the adults in the room. We are the leaders and faces of WWE, and you and I could be Miz KO. And with that, Randy gives him an RKO, then a second one, while wishing him a happy new year.
Yes, that's right.
Randy's back.
He's back. And he's got, like, I guess he's, now that they don't have Cena, you know, with this, every location, you know, gets a t-shirt type of thing. They're doing a Randy Orton one. RKO everything. Buffalo Sabres. So what a collector's item this will be. What a find this will be someday in a thrift store. For somebody like a Randy
you bought
Orton,
this
a Randy Orton Buffalo. Trust me, with the way like these like wrestling shirts seem to be valued, I mean, this could be $5,000 in like, you know, 30 years or something like that.
I didn't get a great view of the crowd, but I didn't see any of these shirts being worn. Like, this is a color of shirt that stands out among wrestling shirts.
Well, this would be a spoiler, okay? So maybe they weren't selling it until after this appearance.
That would be pretty stupid for a Buffalo Sabres shirt that we're not going to sell at the show where we're in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think this will play that well next week in Berlin.
You never know. So 3-hour shows, you know, clearly mean more time for longer promo segments and longer promo segments for guys like The Miz here who...
Listen, take the 2-hour show and everything's just longer. Okay. That's the theme here.
But I think in the 2-hour show, in the 2-hour show, this might have been like a 1-minute thing. And then Randy Orton would have come out, RKO'd him.
He wouldn't have gotten an entrance. He would have just popped up from ringside and RKO'd him.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would have cut out like 5 minutes of him walking to the ring.
This is what a 3-hour version of this segment looks like. Okay. You're letting it breathe. And listen, like we joke about The Miz, but I think he actually does a great job delivering these types of like heel character, performances.
He's the doofus of the program that everyone gets to shine at the expense of.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And like for a guy who used to be a world champion, used to be a main eventer, hasn't been in over a decade, I actually like, I sense he still puts a lot of effort into just like whatever this is, right? So am I off base?
No, I think I think he's a guy that, you know, attacks his role with a lot of he's not checked out. I never watched this guy and feel like this guy's just phoning it in. I think he's very committed. And he more than anything has had longevity based off the fact that he adapts to any role they give him and he is going to make it work. And it's gotten him like this incredible run of a career that if you had told me when I first saw this guy pop up on SmackDown 20 years ago would still be around, I would have thought you were out of your goddamn mind.
Yeah. Yeah. But even for somebody in a role like this, I guess you still have your questions about like, well, how much are they actually bringing to, you know, to the table? Should even a spot like this be reserved for somebody who's maybe presently in NXT that could be the jester on the show?
We're going to have that discussion on this show. The Kabuki Warriors meet with Jax and Lash Legend. They're going to help them win tonight, but then they want a title shot and you will owe us. I was like, owe them for an 8-woman tag win? And Asuka says, we'll owe you a beating. So Randy meets with Cody Rhodes in the back and says, once you beat Drew, I just want to tell you to your face that I'm coming for that title out of respect. And that was it. That was all for Randy. A great night of work if you can get it. And Aldis walks in. Drew will try to get under your skin tonight and reminds Cody what will happen if you put a hand on him. And Cody tells Drew not to worry. So the 8-woman tag, Kabuki Warriors, Lash Legend, and Nia Jax against Rio, Charlotte Flair, and Alexa Bliss. So again, take what this match would have been, which would probably have been 7 minutes with a commercial break. It's now 14 minutes with 2 commercial breaks. And they got the advantage on Bliss for a long period. And they pretty much just built up to hot tags to each of the women, going from Alexa to Charlotte to Io to Rhea. And that's how they built this one up. Io got a major pop when she came in and Rhea gets yanked off the apron. So they get the heat on her. And after the second commercial break, Rhea gets tagged in. She goes for a riptide and is stopped by Nia Jax as Asuka distracts the referee. Asuka's taken out with a sister Abigail. Lash takes out Bliss. Rhea knocks down Lash. And then Kairi comes off the top, is caught by Rhea and turned into the riptide. And it's Io with the over the moonsault pinning Kairi in 14 minutes and 33 seconds. Just a strong win for the challengers, pinning the champions heading into Monday's show in Brooklyn.
I felt it was a fun multi-person tag match that built well to its hot tags. Like for me, I sensed the crowd really engaged throughout it all. And I think it really does show the difference when you have like the stars of the Raw women's division on SmackDown. You know, like this match, I thought the energy was very much centered around Io, Rhea, and the Kabuki Warriors. And I hope this means they continue to stay on the show, because I think the SmackDown division definitely needs them. But I also felt like Lash Legend here continued to gain some value. You know, I'd say she looks fine in ring, comfortable playing the bully with Nia, but she had this big anti-air big boot to Io that was perfectly timed. And I thought that to me was enough to leave a pretty strong lasting impression for her. So she continues to, I think, do really well in this role.
Aldis is in the back with Jordan Grace. and he is trying to recruit Jordan for SmackDown. Chelsea Green and Alba Fire come in. They dismiss Jordan, and Green says, "I can't go out there tonight because of the emotional ending to Stranger Things." And Alda says, "Why don't you be a fighting champion?" And Chelsea says, "I am fighting on the internet." And that's how this ended. And this was the first of several segments with Jordan Grace on the show, who you can add to the list of being a part of the NXT promotional class that are coming to the main roster. So they are just stripping NXT.
Interesting to see them like essentially do something very different this year, where like it seems like we're gonna get an influx of NXT call-ups like in January, like pre-Rumble. So we'll see how that plays out. I mean, I hope that it's relatively well thought out. What does it mean for NXT to be like decimated for, you know, come January? But that's
I'm less concerned about NXT. Like they should be constantly in this cycle of like you shouldn't be here super long.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, they stack up, they did this last year, like, they stack up SmackDown in particular because it's getting the extra hour. The problem is, come June, it goes back to 2 hours. And then, like, where are all these people going to be? And we've,
for the future. Okay.
Well, that's it. But then we're also signing people as well, as we will get to in our next match. Because,
well, then you don't hear from them for half the year, much like the tag division on SmackDown.
I had my flashlight out. Did not spot Mr. Shelley or Mr. Saban on this 3 hour SmackDown. I thought,
where are
like
the Street Profits? Where have they been?
They're in the abyss somewhere. Okay, they don't bench people.
Hanging out with Abyss in the back.
They might be. Yes.
Jordan Grace has a call up. What do you think?
I mean, I figured like she came in at probably like a pretty good deal, and I didn't see her being long in NXT. I wouldn't say the NXT run was all that memorable that she had.
I don't know what she really gained in NXT, to be honest. Like when she made that debut at the Rumble, you can argue she was already ready.
It's like she did the feud with Blake Monroe, and then they were kind of just starting like this. Like they were kind of teasing this heel turn, like she was eventually going to turn on Thea Hale. But it doesn't feel like they're going to. It looks like they're just, you know, it felt like they were just starting something with Thea Hale, and they're just moving on from that if she's getting the call up now.
Yeah. If the idea is to, like, you know, just like bring up new talent from NXT to help SmackDown, I would have made the argument that like she was probably needed like 6 months ago, you know, because this show has such a, at least poorly booked, I'm not necessarily going to say just like weak talent wise, but a very poorly booked tag division that like surrounding, I'm sorry, Mi-Chin, B-Fab, all this stuff. Like that could have really used Jordan Grace throughout all that time. So I think she's sorely needed. I imagine she'll stay on SmackDown.
But thankfully, this is the one bright spot, okay, of these 3 hour SmackDowns. Kit Wilson. He comes out, and for all the talk about WWE theme songs, and boy, there are not a whole lot of pleasant things to say about them. Kit Wilson came out to like the best theme I have heard in the longest time. He is, this guy's my favorite character on SmackDown right now.
I swear I didn't text John. I didn't talk to him once throughout the course of this like show. I had the exact same reaction.
Oh, this was so good.
This
like,
Titantron.
Dude, this guy awesome. Wouldn't have even be getting an entrance a week ago. And here, this is the best part of this guy. Like this entrance, it feels like a commercial, like pop song that he's coming out to. It's so unlike a WWE theme where it's just like catchphrase off the top into some diresome fucking instrumental.
Yeah. Yeah. And now for all we know, maybe it was all AI generated or something.
I don't care. It's fine. This is, I'm in favor of AI. If
it was made by the person who entered our Christmas theme song contest.
Yes.
But like, I think the Tron, I even think that's awesome.
It feels like this guy is at least being somewhat hands-on. Cause I just can't imagine this level of attention being given to Kit Wilson each week.
Is his partner that injured that like they see, like, I mean, I don't know if Pretty Deadly is going to be a thing anymore.
He's been out a long time. Wasn't he a shoulder as well?
I mean,
yeah,
I don't anyway. Remember.
Wow. So he cuts a promo on the toxic sports fans in Buffalo, or of the three, how Bill's Mafia is toxic, four. And then he is confronted by his opponent. Is that Zack Ryder? No, folks. He comes out and his graphics that read Zack Ryder go to black and then are rechristened Matt Cardona. And then Michael Cole has to bring attention to this. Like, wait a minute. Did you see? He went from Zack Ryder to Matt Cardona. It's like, in what logic in the world of this company does this, like, this could have been a nice little subtlety that you catch on. Like, I can see what's happening here, but to have the lead announcer then explain this to me, like, please tell me, how is he two different people here? Like, explain the in storyline, like what this was within the context of this program.
I mean, you know, wrestlers just have many names. I think
that was my nickname. That's what my friends call me, Zack Ryder.
We've come to accept that, have we not? I mean, you know, somebody could be like Ron Killings at one point and then R-Truth the next.
But these are two very clear, like, government names is what it feels like, as opposed to, like, you know, R-Truth. I was like,
At least with the truth, we had a promo justifying it. Are you suggesting, like,
this? We just got the graphics changed, and he's Matt Cardona. And they also announced he is now officially part of the SmackDown roster.
The simple answer is
because.
Okay, because, but also, like, Zack Ryder, I think this is just my headcanon about maybe their justification for it. Zack Ryder was very much like a, you know, like a comedic, low card guy. Maybe they feel like Cardona's done a great enough job outside of the WWE rebranding himself to make himself feel like a more serious persona. That is, like, I do ask, you know, because not
they did not feel that way a month ago when he lost to Cena tournament.
It's a good question, but, like, they don't allow just anybody to come in with their actual names, you know.
No.
So I wonder if, like, what sort of bargaining chip he might have had, or if they just saw value in having Matt Cardona instead of...
I don't know if all those interviews he did gave him a ton of bargaining power.
You're right. This guy's wanted to come back, like, I don't know, since the moment he left. Like, it's like...
You know that scene in Seinfeld when like, Kramer's, like, meeting with them and they offer him, like the first offer, he's like, deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I feel that's how the negotiations might have gone.
Yeah.
But hey, he got his name. Credit to him here. Now, all those aside, listen, there's a lot of people there, fans of Matt Cardona. Like, this to me is one where when we are looking at this, like, this is a roster that it's crowded at the best of times. And yes, we are getting this extra hour here. But there are all these call-ups at this point. Like, is this, like, where is Matt Cardona going to be in 6 months? Like, I don't think you're signing a guy with the intent that this guy is going to be, like, a main event level talent. I would think your absolute ceiling would be something approximating an LA Knight. To me, that would be your best mm-hmm. case scenario for a Matt Cardona. Do you like this signing? Like, does in the overall, like, roster construction that they are making, and at a time when you are introducing all these other younger stars?
So we know this is a very creative person. Obviously, we know this is a person who has the ability to get over on his own. I think what he did coming off of the WWE really is quite remarkable. You know, his ability to rebrand himself as the King of the Indies was terrific, really, for a time. And coming back to the WWE, I don't know if, like, what the appeal is, because I think the appeal of having a Matt Cardona in GCW was that you had such a WWE guy wrestling WWE style, looking like a typical WWE Ken Doll type of character in a GCW, right? That's why it worked so well. In the WWE, he just looks like a generic WWE guy, right? So what exactly is going to be the twist of this particular character that might make things interesting? On the surface, if we're just getting, like, I don't know, another Zack Ryder retread, that to me does not interest me at all. The interest to me would be to see what he could do with Chelsea Green if he gets paired up with her. And I thought that role might have been for Ethan Page, you know, getting called up. I mean, I feel like Cardona Green probably makes a bit more sense at this point.
After watching that guy for the past year, if there's a guy that has earned himself a main roster spot, it is Ethan Page. I think that guy has been one of the most, like, underrated, but, Like, it is like that guy has made the most of this transition to NXT. He was not looked upon as like the sexiest pickup of ex AEW talent. And man, he's just done a terrific job. And I would say he is outgrowing NXT and by extension, like AAA. But, you know, he's someone they clearly have a lot of confidence in just looking at all the roles they have put him in.
100%. And when I mentioned, like, okay, not to say like he should be like in a Miz role, but even somebody in a Miz role like could be taken by somebody like an Ethan Page. Not to say he should be in that position. He should be poked a lot stronger coming in. But maybe his destination is Raw. You know, maybe. But for Cardona, getting back to that, I see his ultimate destination doing something with Chelsea, and I think like that could be entertaining, interesting.
Maybe they'll be on opposite sides of a mixed nuts tag.
That tends to be not that unusual these days.
So Wilson slips out of the corner and he kicks out Cardona's legs, and dude, he just smashed his head coming down onto the mat and calls Cardona toxic, takes a drop kick, reboot, and a tiger driver, and then Wilson has a move, the tourniquet, which he manages to hit, only gets a two count.
What what is that a play on words referencing? The tourniquet.
His career was like bleeding to death, and thankfully this gimmick has cut off the excessive blood loss.
He needs something that is obviously a bit more on brand with his current character.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure there is a logical, there's a rationale behind this name, because I couldn't put it together. And then Zach hits what is now back to being the Rough Rider.
I don't think so anymore. At least that was in question.
Yeah, Graves says we still call it that. And Cole's like, well, what else would we call it? So Michael Cole, clearly a Triller TV Plus subscriber.
I don't know how much
he was following this guy's last 5 years every weekend.
Yeah. I don't know how much TNA he's been watching.
Yeah, wins this one in 4 minutes and 18 seconds. I really enjoy Kit Wilson. That's all I'm going to say.
I wasn't like, okay, the big news coming out of this, maybe even show, is the return of Zack Ryder on a full-time basis. But I kind of came out of this too, like, way more entertained by Kit Wilson here. And I can't believe it, because like backstage, if like we're about to do our best and worst of, Kit Wilson is going to certainly be one of those, you know, considerations for worst character of the year. Every interaction he's had as this toxic masculinity character has been terrible. But who would have thought a 3-hour show is all this guy needed? Okay, take him out from behind the curtain, give him this amazing Titantron and music. And I think a catchphrase that like is already like connecting with the crowd tonight, "You are toxic," is to me already over, at least according to some of the vocal reactions we heard tonight. So I kind of like that a lot. Otherwise, the match was very average. Like, it was exactly what you picture in your head. So,
yeah, it's sort of like when they brought back Cardona for the Cena tournament, they did it. Where was it? It was before the Madison Square Garden Raw, and they did it like Albany. It was like Albany. And it's like, here we look at it, it's like, now we got the Rumble coming up. No, we're going to do it in Buffalo. His surprise unannounced return, which is like, whatever. I'm not saying Cardona is,
this is a special show. It felt like, it felt very much like a season premiere type of show.
It was. Yeah. It was. So Kathy Kelly interviews Damian Priest, and he reflects on his 6 months feuding with Aleister Black. Enough is enough. It ends tonight. You tried to change me. You tried to break me. You don't tell me what to do. You tried to burn my face. Well, I'm going to whip your ass and send you to the ER, and you will be the one to fade to black. Not how any human on this planet would ever speak as he is about to go into a fight, but menacing words from Damian Priest. And we get stats himself, Michael Cole. This is the first ambulance match on SmackDown and the 7th in WWE history coming up.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering. Yeah,
I was ranking them in my head. The Wyatt 6 video. So it is not, it is Bo Dallas unmasked. He is not playing the Uncle Howdy character here, but he asks what the meaning of family is. And he questions He says, that's the question that Solo has been asking since being exiled from the bloodline. You cannot comprehend that the force you are up against, and you mock what you can't understand. Our family is filled with millions of fireflies around the world that will always remember, and it's time to chop down your family tree at the root, and when the dust settles, we will be the ones. Mm-hmm. Now, tell me if I'm going delirious from 3-hour SmackDowns already. Was this a good Wyatt Six promo?
Well, why did you think it was good?
Why did I think it was good? I understood what the message was. That was a big obstacle to every other Wyatt Six promo that I had.
I guess, like, I'm having trouble. Care to explain?
I mean, to me, this was a lot less of, first of all, not playing the Uncle Howdy character, I think did wonders for this segment.
But he still spoke the same.
I thought this was a much more, as grounded as this group is going to get here. And I felt this was, at least if we're doing this out of this universe type of characters here, I think the key to it is that you do have some level of groundedness to it. And I think they struck like a good balance here.
Okay, but what did he actually say? What is the meaning of family? Solo, you've been trying to find that answer. You claim we aren't family, but you don't comprehend the forces we're up against. It's not just made of us. It's filled with millions of fireflies around the world that will always remember. So he's saying the family isn't just us. It's all of us. So is that the answer to Solo asking what is the meaning of family?
Yes. Solo.
What is the meaning of family? It's
Solo doesn't have fireflies, though.
Okay. That's not what Solo was asking. Solo was asking what the meaning of family is. Okay, John is...
I've got the answer.
Oh, okay. What did you just grab? Welcome to the family. A book? A Fast and Furious book? Somebody got you that for Christmas?
That's the meaning of family.
What is that book?
Welcome to the Family, the explosive story behind Fast and Furious, the blockbusters that supercharged the world.
Let's see the cover. Oh, that looks awesome. Okay.
I was given it for Christmas.
So, like, that sounds great.
So you hated this.
I'm just saying, like, it sounded cool. Yes, I understood the words a little bit more than usual. But did he actually answer the question? And more importantly, like, what exactly, like, is like, what am I supposed to feel coming out?
Solo has been trying to get into Howdy's head about the loss of Bray, how you don't even have a family anymore. And his explanation is that you are abandoned by your family. I have not been abandoned. We are surrounded by all the people that keep my brother's memory alive. That's how I took this to be.
I see.
And okay. I found this came out better than most Wyatt Six promos that I'm totally checked out of.
Okay. I thought you just explained it very well. So thank you.
Well, obviously he didn't. So maybe there's still work to be done.
Maybe for me, it's just like I've seen this so much and that I just... I just automatically, you know, tune out this sort of thing. But okay, sure.
Well, I know what all of us thought a year ago when this all began, this countdown to the Wyatt Six and the Bloodline, or sorry, the MFTs, 4-on-4 in Berlin, Germany.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sami Zayn comes out and he reflects on getting to sit in the crowd for once to watch John Cena's retirement and watching it with his young son and explaining to his son what never seen 17 means. To be hard for a child to understand. And Sammy was explaining to his son, that's how many times John Cena has won the championship. And I'm sure the extended version of this was, well, Daddy, that's not the most title reigns anyone has ever had. I mean, you've got to count all of Ric Flair's various title changes, both overseas and even ones that were recognized in WCW at the time. But I digress, Father. And Part of me prays that this was a legitimate conversation between father and son, because Sammy says, my son then asked me, if John's won the title 17 times, how many times have you won the title? And I had to tell him, zero. And then what could be the worst follow-up to having to tell your son that? Your son then asking you why. And Zayn said, I didn't have an answer as to why. I mean, if this was not just this was way more intriguing to me than the Cena retirement. I wanted a camera on this conversation as a extra.
Maybe Unreal captured it.
We'll see. If those Unreal cameras were playing chess on the night of Cena's retirement. He said, I've won all these other titles, but why is this one missing? And I got sick myself of talking about winning the title last year. I'm not here to talk about being champion anymore. I'm here to do it this year. I'm coming for that belt. And then he is interrupted by Trick Williams, who comes out and gets a hell of a reaction from this crowd in Buffalo. They're all chanting, whoop that Trick. This guy came out looking like a superstar and then cut a hell of a promo. He said that he is what happens when you get Michael Jordan, Mike Tyson, and Michael Jackson in the same place at the same time.
Tyson, Jordan, Jackson.
That'd be quite the round table. He is told, he said that SmackDown needs Trick Williams. They need someone who looks like a champion, and that's why I'm here. And said, I am not like you, Sammy. I'm not someone who can almost get the job done. And Zayn explains, you're right, but you have never been humbled. And you're not the first guy to just show up and thinking that you have the look and that you have all the tools. You are going to be taught what it is to be humbled. And I've got to say, I thought Trick was just outstanding here in this segment. He is part of SmackDown, and Sami Zayn is adding his name as well, going for Cody's championship at some point.
Yeah, I thought Trick sounded amazing. He looked amazing, you know.
Oh, and man.
If you're going to point to the effectiveness of the PC as a developmental system, I think Trick is really a perfect example of somebody who just, certainly gained a character, gained a lot of confidence, gained a lot of ability. You can argue gained a lot of in-ring ability in that time since we first started watching him. And you can certainly also say he's gained a lot of value just from maybe the buzz surrounding him and his name, even for people who may have never seen, you know, a second of NXT before. Like, by the moment he enters the arena here in a main roster call-up proper, he's already seen as a star. He's already seen as a big deal. So, you know, I also found this introduction incredibly interesting because, I mean, the contrast is certainly there, you know. If the idea was to showcase how charismatic and spectacular Trick is, the job was certainly accomplished by positioning him right opposite a guy who couldn't look more normal and look more average.
Even by Sami Zayn standards, like, this guy was able to dress down for this role.
Yeah, like, is he not exactly, like, I dress like this, basically, like, every day. So I found this contrast incredibly interesting, and it kind of highlights how plain Sami Zayn is. But, and I'm stumped as to whether or not, like, that was, like, by design as a positive or a negative thing. Because to some, it's bad, okay? You want your stars to look like a Trick Williams, as he said in his promo. But then to others, I mean, Zayn is a way more relatable and therefore easy to cheer for, like, person than somebody like a Trick Williams. So I guess my question is, like, was this segment designed to actually give Sammy a push coming off of this interaction, or is he just here to make Trick look good?
I think that Sammy is getting poised for something. Let's remember that I didn't even put this together in my head, is that Saturday night's main event is in Montreal. Mm-hmm. And the next weekend, Rumble's in Saudi Arabia. Like, if you were going to do something with Sammy, like, you have back-to-back weekends that you would think are, like, you would want Sammy in some pretty significant roles for those shows. And I do wonder if, like, Randy, to me, should be a more long-term thing. Could Sammy be something more short-term, given the locations of where they're going to be?
That's a great point. Yep. And that show is in 1, 2, 3 weeks.
Yeah. Like, we're coming up, like, I could see some big segment for Montreal. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up in a big match at in Saudi Arabia beyond if he's just going to be another guy in the Rumble, would he be better served like going for a title in Saudi Arabia, for instance?
Well, when we say big match, yeah, that would have to be it, right? Sammy versus Cody for the championship. And you would rather do that in Saudi than you would in Montreal?
I just think Saudi, like, you want Cody on the Saudi Arabia show, right? Like, you can still do something with Sammy on Saturday night's main event, but that should be like your go-home segment.
Why wouldn't Cody be, why wouldn't you put Cody on the Saturday night's main event? But given the timing, one show.
I just don't see them building up two matches like that back-to-back weekends. And I think we've kind of seen with Saturday night's main event, like, I do think there's a bit of a ceiling of, like, the level of match you're going to see headlining one of those shows.
Yeah.
Barring some major retirement.
So then, okay, so if Sammy, let's, you know, play this out. Like, if he's being positioned for a championship title match, like, within the month, so what exactly is Trick's role in all of this? Are they going to actually have a match, or was this just a little segment to preview Trick Williams?
Yeah, I would certainly not want to be beating Trick Williams right out of the gate for that very reason. Again, like, you're just like, I would want Sammy strong for those shows at the end of the month, and I'm sure they are thinking that too. But yeah, obviously this is something you're teasing towards. I mean, you could do a match between them and not necessarily do a finish, but like, you don't have all the time in the world. Like, these shows are coming up really quick. So, like, I would think by this time next week, we should have at least, we should at least have stuff set up for Saturday night's main event, if not starting to build up the Rumble. Throughout the month of January, you have the chance to lock in your subscription at the Post Wrestling Cafe for all of 2026 before the price increase takes effect February the 1st. Simply sign up before February 1st and you will lock in that price all year long. If that's not enough, this month we have the annual Best and Worst of Show as we get together with the Poison Rana crew to look back at 2025. We're also doing live watch-alongs of the Royal Rumbles from 1990 and 1995 with Brandon from New Jersey, a retrospective on the Tanahashi-Okada rivalry, plus reaction to Wrestle Kingdom 20, a review of TNA's debut on AMC, and much more, including TNA Genesis, UFC 324. It's all found at postwrestlingcafe.com. Carmelo Hayes meets with Ilya Dragunov backstage, doesn't believe it was their last time together, and asks him if he's going to continue the open challenge. This would have been hilarious if Carmelo said, no, that's crazy. But no, he will keep the open challenge going and says that one day we will run it back. So Ilya is off to figure out his three-hour version of himself. Hayes then walks into Miz and says, you know, it wouldn't have been possible without you. And the Miz thinks he's being sincere, but says, no, ever since you left me alone, I've been better than ever. So again, the punching bag of SmackDown. Yeah. It's like, this guy's just going to have like a mental breakdown at a certain point on SmackDown. He's just going to like go after everybody.
And what?
It's going to be like a contract killer. He's just going to show up and just go wild.
Talking smack Miz.
Talking smack Miz, yeah. Aldis is hanging out with Rey Fénix. Would love to hear this conversation. And Trick comes in. Fénix says the new guys have a lot to learn. And guess what? Nick Aldis is getting ahead of himself. He's booking this match for next week. You know, these three-hour SmackDowns, Aldis has to do a bit more work now a week out. So we're going to get this next week. What an introductory match for Trick Williams. Rey Fénix.
But certainly...
In Germany.
Will be interesting, yeah. And I don't really expect the best for Rey Fénix, unfortunately.
Well, Nick did suggest for Rey that he could have the best year of his career in 2026. We'll see if that gets off to a big start next week. So Carmelo Hayes, Johnny Gargano for the U.S. title. They got a lot of time here, nearly 17 minutes, two commercial breaks in all of this. Hayes just did a bunch of... various springboard-based offense here, hit a swinging neckbreaker counter in midair, and then he takes a lawn dart. He's sent into the middle turnbuckle. They both go down from clotheslines. Then Hayes delivers a counter into a cutter, and Gargano tries for one final beat, but gets his neck snapped, and then a flying DDT onto the edge of the apron. Candace distracts the referee, and Hayes gets knocked off balance on the turnbuckle, allowing Gargano to hit the air raid crash. Hayes kicks out, and then after multiple counters, it is Hayes executing the first 48, followed by nothing but net for the win in 16 minutes and 46 seconds. And Tommaso Ciampa just nowhere to be seen.
Not this week, at least.
No.
You know? Yeah. So, I mean, you know, as a U.S. title match, these are always expected to be at least the best bell-to-bell match on the show, and I feel like these two cleared that bar pretty well. I mean, over the past year, I think they've really successfully redefined this secondary championship as essentially the Workers' Championship, the TV Championship, and I think there's a high level of expectation for anybody who's chosen to, like, take this role, and Hayes is certainly one of those guys that I have no doubt can live up to it, and this was a great first example. Obviously, it's a great highlight for the supporting cast as well, and guys like Johnny Gargano, or I'm sure like they'll make the rounds again with like Axiom and then Frazier. And
this title should be like a video game where you win the title and you have to go through, like, level one is Johnny Gargano.
Yeah.
Then you move to Nathan Frazier. Then you move to like Axiom.
It's Mortal Kombat. You just like start from the bottom of the tier.
You go through the exact same. Until you get to like the final boss, which is not Dwayne Johnson, but in this world, Tama Tonga, apparently.
He is the Shang Tsung of the WWE.
Yeah. Didn't he just pass away?
Shang, the actor who played Shang Tsung?
The actor, yes, not the character.
I don't know.
Okay. No. Tama Tonga is watching all this backstage and trying to remember what it was like to have singles matches. And in walks Shinsuke Nakamura. So, Shinsuke speaks to him in Japanese. We have no idea what they're saying. Unless El Grande Americano can speak Japanese, we're not going to get this translated. And then Solo shows up and asks Tama if everything is okay. And Tama says, yes, that was an old chapter. And Solo's like, okay, 4-on-4 next week. We're going to Germany. And then Tama looks down the hallway at Nakamura walking off into the sunset.
Yes, very
Tama,
well.
Tama
well
wondering
described.
If he still has his old New Japan World subscription for the weekend.
like living in
what a weird return here.
What for who?
Does this count as a return for Nakamura? I just feel like he was gone. He made his return, and then he was gone for like a couple weeks, and now he's back again in a totally different role here.
I think he's been back. Okay. You know, I think this is.
And just here. He was just in town, just checking out the Sabres.
Yeah. I guess so.
Yeah. God, so, it's like we get an extra hour and it's like all these people you just dust them off to come out.
Got to go to work this week. Yeah. I think they're finally doing something interesting with Tama beyond like, you know, just standing in the background or like doing the hyena laugh. They're giving him an identifiable character trait. And
he speaks Japanese. We have learned.
He's been in Japan for so long. He now speaks very fluent Japanese. So it's something, you know, they're making use of their history in New Japan. You either in WWE, you either have history with somebody from Ring of Honor or New Japan Pro Wrestling.
That's it.
Not just New Japan, Japan, okay?
Could you imagine like Paul Levesque booking like 1984, 1985 WWF? And it's like, oh man, they had a history in Portland together. No. Imagine Vince producing this segment.
But it is one of the identifiable things about Tama Tonga that I would suggest most WWE fans know. Oh, he was in Japan.
That's pretty much the extent of these, like at least the Tama Tonga character. It's like his defining trait, he used to be in New Japan. Because we've pretty much given you nothing else to work with in this last year.
Yeah, nothing. He was in Japan. Really, like all the MFPs have, except for Solo.
That's it.
But, okay. All right.
JC Mateo. Non-Olympian. Rookie wrestler. So maybe we'll one day he'll come out, his graphics will just change. It's like, wait a minute. That's not JC Mateo.
They'll have ruined the JC Mateo name so much that Jeff Cobb will feel like a good alternative. Yeah.
Aleister Black gave us his speaking in tongues. This victory is spiritual. Nothing will change. The only thing to change is you, which by definition would mean something is changing. Priest will never be the same after tonight. And he will place the final nail in the coffin of his delusions.
Yeah. So basically, he's cutting the same promo as always, which is him saying, wins and losses don't matter. Whether or not I win or lose this match that is about the main event, the show, you guys don't, it doesn't really matter. All that matters is you find your aggressive side and I'll have changed you. Well, I mean, no shit. If somebody's going to wrestle a match, of course they're going to be a bit more aggressive. But coming off of this program, I mean, spoiler alert, Black lost. He's still going to claim victory. He's doing the carrying cross.
Yeah, because he changed him. So moral victories exist now for Aleister Black. Kathy Kelly interviews Jade Cargill. And so we didn't get the match with Meechan. And instead of coming up with some story, they're just going with exactly what happened. They had a match at a house show and Meechan hurt her shoulder. And they asked Jade, was it intentional? Now, again, within the body of, like, this is a world where these matches are in somehow, like, they are real matches. Like, what would a non-intentional injury be? Like,
okay, well, listen, you can have a match in MMA where somebody has like a horrible injury, but like you might not necessarily have intended on them having the horrible injury. You just wanted to win, right?
But if I power bombed you, okay, and I gave you a stinger,
yeah,
it's like, was it intentional? It's like,
yes.
Did I want you to break your neck? No, but I was absolutely trying to harm you in such a way that your body would be lifeless for the count of three.
Yeah, but that would only be temporary, right? Only for the count of three. I didn't want you to suffer repercussions beyond that.
Okay.
Unless I was really trying.
Okay. So we got Luthez here. And so she takes credit for it and is now referring to the other women as pigeons. And Jordan Grace walks in, wanting to get a good look at all of her options. And Jade warns her, this is my show and I'm that bitch.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, this seems to like pretty well signal that Grace is going to be here, at least to me. Although Jade did the same thing, like for pretty much everybody on the show.
It would seem like, just based on the call ups, it would seem like Javon is going to Raw. We know Trick is on SmackDown. I'm still curious about like Sol Ruka.
I think NXT needs her. Actually, but you're right. Like, she's probably on the radar too. Yeah. But I think this was a good look at a potential matchup that you'd be seeing like pretty much right away here between Jordan Grace and Jade Cargill. Yeah.
Cody meets with Sami Zayn. He says, I heard what you said out there. Looks like everyone's being honest tonight. Zayn respects Cody, but you have to understand where I'm coming from. My kid's asking me questions, Cody. And Aldis again comes in, and Cody still asks, have you seen Drew? No, we haven't seen Drew. Cody's like, well, I'm going out there for the segment. Like, okay. Sounds like a very haphazardly produced show. Obafemi video airs, and then Cody comes out. He explains, what separates me from the rest is my mentality when approaching anyone in the ring. People see me with the belt, and then the envy comes out. And that's what Drew reeks of, envy. And I can't wait for this fight. And he mentions the importance of this arena, how we had the only good match on a Battleground show that was absolutely atrocious, where the Rhodes family took on The Shield some 13 years ago.
Wow.
He says, my superpower is I play dumb. In a real sentence that was said on WWE programming, the unreal cameras think they're capturing everything, but while they're playing checkers and they're not playing chess. what in God's name? This was primo Cody AEW verbiage.
This is not a great promo from Cody, in my opinion.
No, I didn't think so either,
talking,
dude.
Talking in circles. I mean, I'm sure it made sense to him. Maybe
he's basically, what's he saying? I work the Unreal cameras. So don't take anything I say on that show as any kind of, I'm full of shit, which granted, every one of these performers are playing roles on these shows. That's a side issue here, but this was just so weird. And then he said, there's one word I called Drew, and that's lunch.
Yeah, what the fuck? Like, I didn't think this was, a very strong or even, like, palatable, you know, Cody Rhodes promo.
This was like, wink, wink, listen to how inside I'm going to get type of Cody. And well, it was the worst version of Cody, especially in AEW, because he had no guardrails.
You did a great job explaining the, Bo Dallas promo here. Can you explain this one to me? How does one attain the title? It's not my heart. It's my mentality when approaching anybody in a WWE ring. Okay? I want them to see me seeing them. Is that what he said?
I want them to see me seeing them. Yes. I took it like, I'm working all of you fucks, okay? I'm playing at a higher level than all of you, and I'm giving away my whole thesis here.
So he's a step ahead of Drew, and he sees Drew?
Dude, I didn't know what this was. This was not good.
Yeah, anyway.
Were you excited for the match after Cody's words here?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Drew's on screen, calls Cody so predictable and vanilla as he chooses the stipulations for three stages of hell. Number one, the most hellacious, the straight wrestling match. It's our first stage of hell. Number two, a Falls Count Anywhere match. And if we make it, a steel cage match next week. Yeah. What are the odds they make it to the cage next week?
I think terrible. I think this will end with the Falls Count Anywhere match.
That'd be great. Yeah. He said, I've broken you mentally. Now I'm going to break you physically. And I'm going to put you to the test now. And he says how he's outside of Cody's bus. And I took something very important to you. And I thought he was going to pull out a bottle of Wheatley vodka. But no, he's got a photo of Cody with his father. Now, this photo, I'm sure it has some sentimental value to it. It's a photo that was clearly taken backstage, just with a black backdrop. I would imagine that WWE has...
I can fucking Google image search it right now.
I'm sure it's right there, okay? Yeah. I don't think this frame was handed down by Dusty from his ancestors. I don't think that had any sentimental value to it, but this photo means a lot. So,
No. Just don't. Let's stop here. Like, if they were going to come up with, you know, what is essentially like this storyline's bracelet, you know, it's the CM Punk, AJ, whatever, what dog's name, RIP bracelet. They could have come up with a way better artifact than like whatever this is, you know? Yeah, it completely kills the immersion. Like, at least use maybe a personal photograph, perhaps.
Yes. You know? Yes.
Rather than just like something clearly from WWE.com archives that...
it's like a stock photo that they could...
print it out like this afternoon. There's like no real significant attachment that would tell me that Cody would be willing to like kill this guy over.
I thought you were just going to torch me for trying to make this seem not important, because I did not say this to me was not a tug at your heartstrings memento.
They could have just used AI to maybe make something look a bit older, perhaps.
They could have had literally like these letters. Like, they could have letters that supposedly Dusty had handed down to Cody and was like something sentimental. We don't even need to see the letters. Like, that to me, it was like, okay, that's irreplaceable. This is very replaceable. It was probably created this afternoon.
Very possible.
Could you imagine a picture with your, like, this is just such a, like, there's no backdrop here. Like, this is just such a, looks like Cody's like a, you know, he's a grip on like the production team.
What would be a better photo? Like, if he was backstage at a WCW event, you know?
Like, Cody at one of his wrestling meets and he's got a... Dusty with him, and he's holding the championship with his father.
They probably wrote the storyline this afternoon, so maybe they didn't have time to.
There's no sentimentality from Wei Ting and I. He says that I'm sure Dusty is looking at you ashamed. He smashes the photo, and what do you do if a photo smashes? You sprint to the back, and he runs and runs. Like, what was he gonna do?
Well, he's just angry. That's what's going on.
I mean, the glass is shattered. The photo is fine, by the way.
It wasn't about to be.
Okay. Like, this frame has been shattered. So he races to the back, but the black scorpion has disappeared, and security explains he's not here. And then Drew appears in the ring with the photo that he is what removed from the broken holder.
He teleported, basically. Either in storyline, that was some sort of pre-tape. Obviously, it had to have been a pre-tape.
Yeah.
Then he just like, boom, like appeared in the ring.
Again, like, I'm going to ask you, like, within the body of this show, like, what did he do? Did he give production a tape to play?
Yes.
Or were we supposed to believe that he can teleport?
Yes. I think that is an added power that he's developed.
So Cody's all the way in the back now, and then he's literally got to turn around. He's got to do a 180 and run all the way back, and security still catches him again. So Drew lights the photo on fire, and for any of these angles, you need that line from one of the announcers just to really drive it home, and Corey Graves had us covered. This is too far. this This is too far. We've literally, we saw a man's face lit on fire a few weeks ago. We have seen
We saw it on this show.
We've seen Cody bludgeoned to death. We have seen Rock threaten his mother. This was child's play here. Yeah. Anyway.
They were obviously they were trying to recapture the magic of the CM Punk bracelet story in some form. I think they needed a better thing, you know, rather than just this like very replaceable photo. And that might have helped a bit. But I'll say all in all, like I do continue to ask, who else is asking these sort of questions beyond like maybe like podcasters like I or like the nerdiest of the nerds? You know, is this a question that are we thinking too much about this, John?
Or are we thinking at all? That should be the question.
Well, for most audiences, is this storyline landing?
Were you more interested in this match after this?
The answer to me is actually yes, despite maybe my nitpicks here, because I think the performances were strong. I thought Cody, like, for a very replaceable photo, he was taking this incredibly seriously, and I thought he sold it really well. I like the idea of just, like, you know, taking something important from somebody and destroying it. Like, that adds something to me. Could it have been better? Yes, absolutely it could have been.
Well, I hope this ends with like a maybe Drew takes another selfie with Cody next week. Maybe that'll tie all of this together.
Rob McDonald has a great suggestion here. It should have been Dusty's watch, the watch that Triple H and Nick Khan gave to Cody before Mania.
Wasn't that the watch that Cena attacked him with last year for the heel turn?
Was that ever confirmed that was the watch?
I mean, it was a watch. Sure. What other watch could it have been?
Yeah.
Much like the photo. Watch is replaceable, so he maybe got it fixed last year after the heel turn.
Okay. But if Drew destroyed it, I smashed it into pieces, yeah, that would have certainly been.
They need to get more mileage out of that goddamn watch. Yeah. Chelsea Green and Julia for the U.S. title. Green was more over than Julia here. This is totally impossible to even follow because Chelsea was, we have two heels, but a likable one in Chelsea Green, and Corey explained we're close to Canada, therefore she's over. And so Julia just murders her, curb stomps her, is destroying her. Finally, Chelsea tries for an unprettier. It's stopped, and she hits the radio silence, which Corey notes, we saw that earlier. But Kiana distracts the referee. Elba yanks her off, and then after a double underhook off the top by Julia, she hits a Northern Lights bomb, and just like that, pins Chelsea in 7 minutes and 35 seconds. So we pretty much just hit the rewind button, and we went back 3 months.
Yeah. I mean, the end result of this really has me questioning why the title change at all. Other than, I guess, like maybe the simple explanation that they wanted to
this complete. Chase. We needed the chase for Julia to reach this mountaintop tonight.
They also wanted to complete this sort of North American gimmick thing with Ethan Page on NXT, didn't they? You know, between like the AAA championships in his North American championship and I guess the US championship. Like, could that have been the only reason why we got this, like, like 1 month title reign for Chelsea Green here? It would be very odd that they would borrow a championship essentially from a main roster show just to support that. But I don't think Chelsea gained anything from it. I mean, certainly Julia, you can argue maybe was hurt a bit by it. But let's use that as a line here to mark what hopefully might be a better run for Julia this time around with this championship.
Maybe she should do an open challenge. It'd probably be a lot more effective for her than what Carmelo needs.
Yeah, and more importantly, I'm excited to see, like, this is the championship to showcase your NXT call-ups, whoever they're going to be, right?
It's a video. Kathy Kelly interviews Ripley and Io just to preview their match. Flair and Bliss wish them luck, but they also want the next title shot. Fraxium.
I thought that was the end of the show. Like, at least in recap form, like, that felt like the end of the show to me. I'm like, okay, yeah, this is a 3-hour show. We have, like, a whole main event left.
Yeah, we still have a 25-minute main event ahead of us. Fraxium, that's Nathan Frazier, for those of you, and an Axiom. You realize the difference between, like, for all the hype surrounding Javon Evans, and it's like, I watch Nathan Frazier, and
oh, he's just as good. Yeah.
like, obviously, Javon Evans does circles around this guy charisma-wise, but, I mean, in terms of a, like,
in-ring talent,
they seem they are much more invested in Javon Evans, but I just don't know how you look at a Nathan Frazier. It's like, this guy is unbelievable, and he is just totally wasted.
I think charisma is a major part of the equation, really.
And that is something that, I mean, Javon Evans is miles ahead of this guy.
You could, like, if you're a writer in this company, I think you could easily write for Javon Evans better than you can write for Nathan Frazier. Like, obviously you could write a lot more for Fraxium than they currently do, but
these aren't exactly segments where you get to flex those muscles either. Like, there's nothing to work with here. Like, this guy did at least get to talk in NXT, and I mean, he had like a goofy persona to him, but certainly had a lot more personality than he does now, where he's just, you know, he's, you know, backdoor painter here. Like, so
that's what he is.
They meet with Gargano and Candice LeRae, and I guess Gargano's been holding on to Axiom's mask all these weeks. Axiom wants it back, so Gargano hands it to Candice and says, well, you've got to take it from her. And oh, you're such an awful guy. He wants a match with Gargano, and then he's going to take his mask back.
No, it sucks. It's terrible. This tag division, I think, has been pretty awful since the switch to 2 hours. And at least in this first edition of a 3-hour show, it still looks like they're in a bit of a holding pattern while the Wyatts and MFTs feud continues. At least we're going to get a match between these two.
That's true. We're going to get a singles match because Ciampa's disappeared here. Ambulance match closes the show. Aleister Black and Damian Priest after 6 months. Went by like a blink of an eye. So they fight towards the ambulance early on. There's a pounce that sends Black over the desk, and he recovers using a chair. And there's a Frankensteiner by Priest met with a Black mask, so both men are down, and Zelina tries to get the stretcher to help Black get Priest to the back. And he's hit with the double knees on the stretcher. They fight by the ambulance, and the backboard gets driven into Priest's throat. There were several instances here where you would have thought that his esophagus exploded here. They put his head between a chair and kicked out the backboard to the throat. He's fine. And then they open the door. Well, Zelina opens the door, and there is Rhea Ripley, who's just been waiting in this ambulance, presumably since her last pre-tape ended, and this place went nuts for this surprise. And she attacks Zelina, takes her out with a riptide. It was actually a very good spot that they had here. Priest gets placed on the ambulance, but he won't, or into the ambulance, won't let the door close. So Priest uses a crutch, a fire extinguisher, and then the dreaded fireball right to the face of Aleister Black. And boy, did he get this guy. The crowd starts chanting, "Run him over," which he did not. But Aleister Black, clearly, whatever deep meditation he was able to exhibit in the moment, recovered from this fireball in an amazing amount of time. This was the equivalent of, like, there was like a bug that like had flown onto his forehead that he just slid off. And dude, you've never seen a guy so unimpacted by a fireball ever.
I mean, maybe the burn will take some time to actually, you know, show up.
Right. Well, this guy, his vision seemed remarkable after this. They fight by the stands. He takes a razor's edge onto the windshield of the ambulance. And then they go on top of the ambulance. And Priest had brought out these tables and sends Black off the ambulance through the tables. I mean, this guy, you cannot knock Aleister Black not taking all the punishment in this match. And Priest goes down, and the ambulance door is locked. I was like, oh no, there's somebody that's going to attack Damien. So he goes to this, he opens the side door. Then he comes back. Now he opens the regular doors. And he's just trying to figure out how this goddamn ambulance opens. Finally gets Aleister in there, and he shuts not one, not two, but three doors. And he wins the ambulance match. As Michael Cole proclaims, months upon months of torture led us to this. And that was the end of Aleister Black. But don't worry, folks. Still had 2020 vision by the end of this.
Well, Aleister Black won this feud, you see, because in the end, Damian Priest changed.
That's it. You changed, man. You changed.
Yeah, this feud has been moving along at a snail's pace for 6 months. But I think we could say it closed with what I felt was a very strong final match here. Highlighted by several big spots. I mean, really starting from the Ripley appearance in the end here, to the fireball, to that razor's edge on the ambulance, to that final fall off the ambulance. I mean, Black really got no offense in all that time. So they really wanted you to believe that this was the end of this feud because, like, Priest killed this guy, you know? Like, for the past, like, the whole 5 minutes was just him destroying Aleister Black. So it certainly took me a bit longer to get into the match because I had such little interest in the feud, but they overcame that certainly with the action by the end. They worked really hard in this one, so... You know, they ended strong, and I'm happy to have a fresh start for the both of them.
It ended strong. I didn't even have the problem with the fireball. That should have been the end of the match. Like, that should have been the final thing that keeps...
He should have done the fireball on top of the ambulance to send him off the tables.
Sure. That you're right. That would have been great. Like, that ties in. Like, the fireball was a big part of this story, but the fact that they did it when they did, I hated that part of the match, but it was overall...
He had to prep it in the ambulance and all that as well.
Well, I've been in ambulances though before, and like there's always material there for a good old fireball. You know.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So there you go. It was the first 3 hour SmackDown. You know, it was a show that certainly I did like the fact that they were creating, like, yes, the Drew match happens next week, but you're getting several big names that are all gunning for the belt with Sami Zayn, with Randy Orton, and no, you do have the introduction of these new characters, so there was a certain freshness to the feel. You got a surprise title change. I don't know how much that changes the trajectory for Julia, but hopefully this is a better take two with the U.S. title than the first run. I would say, like, this was a show that it certainly had a lot of good to it, and it did at the same time have your requisite problems that a 3 hour WWE program is going to convey.
Yeah. Let me add before I get to my final thoughts. I did not watch this live, and I think hopefully most of us have been through this long enough by now, especially with these 3 hour shows.
There's no one watching these live
to know that you should be creating plenty of pad time, like start the show later so you can zip through all the commercials. It's a much more enjoyable experience that way. But I thought this was a good show. They put a lot of effort into like making this feel like a season premiere with a lot of big debuts, returns in Matt Cardona's case. And just like, like a culminating big stipulation matchup with this ambulance match. You had a very good Carmelo Hayes, Johnny Gargano match. I thought the multi-woman tag match was also very good as well. And add to that, a title change here with Julia. Like, it was a newsworthy show that it certainly kept my attention throughout the entirety.
All right, let us go, and we will say goodbye to those here on the YouTube channel. But this weekend, folks, Wrestle Kingdom 20, if you are interested in hearing Wei and I run through that show, we will be up on the Post Wrestling Cafe this Sunday night. Otherwise, free feed, you will hear from Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson. Plus, Saturday evening, John Kleinchester joins Kate from Montreal for Collision Course as they start the residency in Arlington, Texas. So that is what is on deck for the weekend. And then we'll be back on Monday after Raw from Brooklyn, New York, with the first Raw of 2026, the Stranger Things edition of Raw.
That's correct. Yeah, we'll see if the vibe might be similar. Can we expect some NXT, you know, appearances to show?
Oh, it's going to be a very big show on Monday. I would imagine like you should shoot like a big angle. I would think on Monday, like I think they're going to treat this like one of the, if not the biggest Raw of the year.
Doing a Stranger Things tie-in, I think, is really their attempt. They want people, like, with the Stranger Things logo on Netflix, you know, people who might be interested in the show might just decide to click on this thing. So this will be one of their big attempts at grabbing a non-wrestling audience, which could be good or bad.
Maybe we'll get, like, the Stranger Things opening, but it's going to be the Raw logo. And then because it's year two, we'll get chapter two.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.